The International Mastermind Association is a group of like-minded individuals who have come together based on the mastermind concept espoused in Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich. As masterminders, we commit to coming together as a group on a regular basis for a coordination of knowledge and effort in a spirit of harmony between two or more people for the attainment of a definite purpose. We come together to share knowledge with one another, support each other in setting and achieving our goals, and hold one another accountable to what we commit to do for ourselves. We set goals in 10 areas of our lives: spiritual, family, health, financial, business, civic, personal, educational, recreational, creativity. You must have goals and plans if you are going to succeed in any endeavor. After all, successful people have plans. Napoleon Hill said, quote, education, knowledge, and influence are more powerful than any exchange of money, end quote. For more information about International Mastermind Association, visit us on the web, internationalmasterminders.com, or once again, Facebook the group, International Mastermind Association.
Good morning, good morning, and welcome to the Think and Grow Rich show with the International Mastermind group. We are really, really excited to have you, and this is going to be, like every week, an amazing show. We're so excited to have you with us. This is more than anything a conversation, so I really want you to be prepared to call in, join the conversation. You can talk to our guests. You can have a conversation with our co-hosts as well. You would do that by dialing into 661-554-9219. And you can do that every morning, every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you feel inclined to ask a question, all you have to do at that point is just hit number one on your phone and you'll be added to the conversation. Each week, we explore the success formula of Napoleon Hill as outlined by his best-selling classic book, Think and Grow Rich, and we are excited to have you. This week, we're going to be discussing Chapter 4, Specialized Knowledge, Personal Experience and or Observations. Not only are we going to have that conversation with our incredible co-host, this week we're going to have Michael Kublin, who is just an amazing leader. He's an amazing executive coach, which is near and dear to my heart. So you are absolutely going to grow from this conversation. And then it's not going to be just me, so I get to steer the ship a little bit, but I've got a group of co-hosts, and as I bring each of them on to say hello, I'm going to ask them to share a little bit about what has got them so excited about not only this book, but this chapter in particular, because each week they show up with an energy that is just absolutely contagious, especially for any of us here in the studio. So first up is Ms. Ursula Odom. Ursula, join the show and share what keeps you so excited about this book.
Good morning. Well, I love Think and Grow Rich because it allows me to find out who I am and what I can do and then how I can help the world. And I do that because I'm Sula Too. I'm a CEO of Sula Too, and we make old, new, and everything that we do in that we capture, preserve, and present legacy information in any form possible. And what that means is I love your story. I love being able to capture those stories and then form them and give them back to the world so the world can use them. And this show is all about that, talking about how we get to do the things we do and how we can help others every Saturday. And this chapter, Specialized Knowledge, it means we find out what skills we have and how we're using those skills and should we use those skills. So I'm excited about our guests and this chapter today. Thank you. And Pagin.
Well, fantastic. I'm always excited to hear from you, Ursula. Pagin.
I am here, and I'm so happy to be with everybody today. You know, I'm going to start with a sentence from Specialized Knowledge because I think I know this is one of the things that transformed my life. And that's on page 77. It says, before you can be sure of your ability to transmute desire into its monetary equivalent, you will require specialized knowledge of the service merchandiser profession, which you intend to offer in return for your fortune. And I will tell you, you asked the question about how do we find this book. At 17, I was a Bronx girl, and I was introduced to this book by someone who cared about me deeply. And I started reading the book. I didn't understand anything about the book. But I will tell you that one, that and some mentors inspired and motivated me to leave the gang and go to, I actually felt like I had to leave the country, and I ended up going to Spain. I had $1,000, didn't know anybody, didn't know the language, was not part of a group. I just knew I needed to get out. And my first experience was with that desire of monetary equivalent, you need to require specialized knowledge. I had been working part-time as a nursery school teacher, couldn't find a job in Spain, and found myself pivoting to be able to sell the first bilingual nursery school in Madrid to expats. We ended up growing it to 3, and I moved back by 23 years old after I sold it at a profit. I will say that over the years, learning from you, Galen, and Anne, and being inspired by what I learned from the show every week, as Anne says, I let the book read me and grow me, and those of you listening, no matter where you are, provides the path, and that's why I'm here. And I know Peter's here and has some insights on. I can't wait to hear from my friend Peter.
Thank you so much, Padine. Galen, good morning to you. Everyone listening, good morning as well. My name is Dr. Peter A. James, and I am so excited to be here with all of you this morning. As we talk with our distinguished guests, my colleagues here who are introducing themselves, but then we also dive into this phenomenal book, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, and especially this week's chapter, Specialized Knowledge. Actually, this month's chapter, Specialized Knowledge. A little bit about me. I am a high-performance coach. I partner with high achievers or individuals as they seek to realize their potential in their business, their career, or their life. And quite honestly, I utilize Think and Grow Rich, particularly this chapter, a whole lot as I work with individuals, as I partner with individuals. And one of the things that jumped off the page to me, Pagina, to piggyback off of you, is in chapter 4 of this book, Specialized Knowledge, it mentions that knowledge is power. Wrong. I'm saying it all wrong. Actually, the book says knowledge is only potential power, right? It only becomes power when and if it is organized into definite plans of action and directed to this definitive end. Society often paints the picture that this knowledge is power in and of itself, but we've got it all wrong. It only has the potential to be power. And I hope you can even just take a little bit of that and listen in as we weave through this chapter for the rest of this session here and think about how this applies to you. I said a whole lot there to gain. Thanks so much, Galen. But I think we have Miss Anne next on deck.
All right. Anne McNeil, the master builder, helping you to build a stronger and better life. And as the founder of the International Mastermind Association, I help entrepreneurs think and grow rich with the McNeil Factor Mastermind System. Back to you, Galen.
Yeah, well, this is going to be another amazing show. I can feel the energy in the room. I'm really excited about this. Almost 21 years ago, I read an article about how the process for changing clay, something as delicate as clay, into pottery that we can use, and something as strong as steel into something as beautiful, molded into something as beautiful as jewelry, is done in an oven by baking that material at incredibly high, intense temperatures. And that oven is called a kiln. And that article meant so much to me that today, 21 years later, I am the leadership strategist and founder and CEO of Kill Global Coaching and Consulting. And just as materials and matter has changed from their raw state into what they want to be, I do the same thing for leaders. I transform leaders from where they are to where they want to be. And I am just really, really excited about this book and this chapter in particular. I want to read something for you from this book just to share with you why we are all so excited. And if you were to look at page 75 in the book, it says, there are only two kinds of knowledge. One is general, the other is specialized. General knowledge, no matter how great in quantity or variety it may be, is of but little use in the accumulation of money. The faculties of the great universities possess, in aggregate, practically every form of general knowledge known to civilization. Most of the professors have no idea how to amass great wealth. They specialize in teaching knowledge, but they do not specialize in the organization of the use of the knowledge that they have accumulated. And that just really hit me. And then if you also go to page 83, Hill says, the person who stops studying because he or she has finished school is forever, hopelessly doomed to mediocrity, no matter what that person's calling may be. The way of success is the way of continuous pursuit of knowledge. And I think that that's what we're talking about here, is how do you absolutely admire, accumulate the general knowledge, but transition that into the specialization of your knowledge, the packaging of that knowledge, so that you can not only accumulate wealth, which is what, you know, we talk about, but accumulate almost anything that you want. This is the process, and the process is outlined in this book, and we're going to be talking about that with our guest on the other side of this commercial. So please take a listen to all 13 principles, and be prepared to join our conversation. We would love to have you. This is going to be another amazing show. Let's take a listen to all 13 steps of the principles.
Number one is desire. Napoleon Hill said that everything starts with a burning desire, a compelling reason for doing what it is we do. Step two is faith, having belief in our ability to attain that which we desire. Step three is what we call auto-suggestion. Auto-suggestion simply means being very intentional about the things that we are pouring into our thoughts, into our brains, and into our consciousness. Our brains, our minds, will receive everything automatically, but we have to work extra hard to make sure that the positive things are what we are feeding ourselves, because those positive thoughts are going to turn into positive actions. Step number four is specialized knowledge. No one person knows everything, even about whatever their particular area of expertise might be. And the value of the mastermind principle is using the specialized knowledge of other people. Step number five is imagination, the workshop of the mind. Everything starts with our imagination and our thoughts, the burning desire to transform those thoughts into our reality. In order to do that, we have to take a look at step six, which is organized planning. That is how we crystallize our desire into action, organizing ourselves. Having the thought and not acting on the thought isn't going to get us anywhere. We have the thought, we go through the organized planning to transform that thought into action. Step number seven is decision. What Napoleon Hill said is the mastery of procrastination. Napoleon Hill said that the antidote to procrastination is simply to make a decision and then move on that decision. Step eight is persistence. We have to have a sustained effort, which is induced by our faith, in order to achieve our goals. One of Napoleon Hill's books I love, even the title, 3 Feet from Gold. Those people who became rich during the gold rush in the Wild Wild West days didn't do that because they were necessarily smarter or had better information than anyone else. It's because they stayed just a little bit longer. Sometimes people left when they were just literally 3 feet from gold. So hanging in there, being persistent, is step number 8. Step number 9, the power of the mastermind, the driving force. None of us can accomplish anything on our own. Everybody, I don't care who you are, from the most prominent person to the person who might be considered the lowest on the totem pole, everybody has someone who helped them get to where they are. And the power of the mastermind is being able to use those influences around us. Use the thoughts, use the knowledge, use the exploration of other people to help us in achieving our goal. Step number 10, the mystery of sex transmutation. This title can be a little confusing, but essentially what the mystery of sex transmutation means is that we oftentimes in our society think of sex as being purely physical. It is absolutely physical, but what Napoleon Hill teaches us is that sex also has an emotional element, and that sex is the strongest of our desires. That if we can take our sexual energy, transform that into positive, creative influences, it can propel us to new heights. And so we spend quite a bit of time talking about the mystery of step 10, which is sex transmutation. Step number 11 is the subconscious mind, which Napoleon Hill tells us is the connecting leap between our human mind and the infinite intelligence, the source of all thought, the source of all creativity. Conscious mind, we spent some time talking about how we use that through the influence of autosuggestion and what we're feeding into our mind. Step number 12, which is the brain, the broadcasting and receiving station of thought. Final step number 13, the sixth sense, the door to the temple of wisdom. This is the final step through which infinite intelligence may and will communicate voluntarily without any effort from or demands by the individual. The principle is the apex of the philosophy. It can be assimilated, understood, and applied only by first mastering the other 12 principles.
Well, welcome back, and I am just really, really excited to have this conversation with Michael Kublin, who is founder and president of PeopleTech, a leadership coaching and development company who specializes in helping leaders and teams and organizations learn, grow, and transform their talent. So, Michael, I'd love to bring you into the conversation. Welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit more about yourself. There is just so much in your bio that I'm leaving out, and I'd love to just kind of have you bring light to that. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Galen, and thank you so much for this wonderful group that follows the principles of the book that I started to study back in the 90s after I started PeopleTech. Just to give a little bit of background, I grew up in South Florida and became a Florida Gator in the 70s, so go Gators. And then after Gainesville, I ended up working for a man named Ross Perot that many of you may have heard of. He was a little powerhouse that I believe used all of these principles, or quite a few of them. He started a company called EDS. So I went into the computer world back after I graduated, came back from EDS in the computer, learning computers, and got a job for a large financial institution where I became a leader, and at the same time became a Shark. I got an MBA from Nova Southeastern, so go Sharks. And I've got two children that also are one's a Knoll and one is from FAU as well. So I've covered the whole state in terms of colleges here. But I began working for this large financial institution, had a main desire to get into sales at one point or another. And I ended up getting that opportunity with the financial institutions. I left computers, went into sales, worked in that for about 3.5-4 years. And a gentleman who is leading the center asked me to come back in and take what I had learned in sales and marketing and help IT people become more people focused. Back when the large mainframe computers were in existence, people really, in terms of their skills, were more really behind the scenes. So he wanted to help the behind the scenes people come out and really build good relationships with their customers. And so I ended up taking on that project, went back into the technology world, and led a project across the country, and rolled out a thing called client services, and became really good. But as I was doing that, I was also leading a team, and I got some feedback, personally, some feedback that was, a lot of it was good, but then some of it punched me really, really hard. For example, I got feedback that, Mike, you're a visionary, you're motivating, you're inspiring, you're good with relationships, but at the same time, you're wishy-washy and you don't hold people accountable to behavior. And that kind of hit so, so hard. And I didn't really know what to do with it, but I found a woman who helped doctors and nurses in hospitals. She had her PhD in educational leadership, and she showed me where my behavior was creating those perceptions, both good and bad. So I became, at that point, on a quest, which ties into this chat really well, knowledge. And at that point, it was general knowledge. I was learning just one tool, another tool, another tool. I continued to work at the large financial institution. I actually relocated to Arizona. And out there, I said, you know what? What I really, really want to do is start my own leadership company. And so I got four other people and myself together. And we began meeting every week and talking about, again, this chapter's knowledge. We began to organize knowledge that we each had in terms of what is a great leader and what is an average leader and what is a poor leader, and began to learn other tools and began to study those tools. And they were really all regarding self-reflection and looking at behavior and looking at what makes a great team and those kind of tools. So began to get certified in some of those, and we took these tools and we started to organize it. Unfortunately, that team did not make it as a success, because one of the main things was a combination of these principles that are in Think and Grow Rich. For example, desire, faith, you know, those things were crucial, and a lot of us didn't have enough faith to jump out of the corporate world, including myself. I was still working at a large company at that point, and so we didn't have enough faith to believe in what we were actually doing, even though we had clients that we had already gotten, and we were going ahead and servicing those clients really well, but through a series of things, again, I call in these 12 principles, we did not make it. So I started another company called People Tech, and the goal at that point was going to be working with people in technologies. And a buddy of mine said, Mike, why don't you make it a TEK, not a TECH? And so that was really a great saying, and I thanked that person over and over and over. And so that's how the name People Tech came into being. I finally jumped out of corporate America and started the company and began running around being leaders, helping teams and helping organizations, basically work through some of the things that I had struggled with back in the back when I got the feedback in the 80s. And what I started to do is actually organize, but I started to take the knowledge and begin to specialize in it. And where we really became really strong, where I became very strong, was working with leaders that had been really good at doing a job or a task really, really well. They got promoted up the ranks, and all of a sudden they have this team that they have, bam, they've got this team, they've got a lead. And no one ever gave them any information on how to really run, lead, and guide a team towards fabulous success. And so I began to take the knowledge that I had studied with these different tools and different self-reflection instruments and things for teams, listening, communication, handling conflict, and I began to put them into a process. So I hired another woman who was a friend of mine who had a PhD in educational leadership, and she took what I was doing with individuals, and we created She helped me with another one of the steps, which is to organize the knowledge. And we put it into a process, and that process is called the leadership journey. And it's when I first ran it as a pilot. I led them myself, three groups of 10 people each, and we ran it over a 6-month period, and we met for several hours a couple of times a week. And what I noticed was people weren't doing the homework, and it was just too much to do in a week's time. So what ended up happening is I made it every other week and gave people enough time to do the tools, and then gave homework in between so they get a chance to go out and practice what they learned from these tools in the real world. And then what we did is we came back and we discussed it. And we use a coaching process. All the people in PeopleTech are coaches. They're all certified executive coaches. And what we were able to do is help them to not be afraid to really look at some of their biggest vulnerabilities. Some people come across as way too tough. Some people come across as way too easy. Some people don't know how they want to come across and in what situations. And these tools help guide people to that. Why? Because generally our Achilles heel comes from our biggest strength. And during the program, we help people identify their biggest strength and what's holding them back the most. So that's how the journey became going. My father had a terrible car accident in 2002. I relocated back to South Florida, and there's where I had read. I had prior to that been going around doing speeches, and so in the 90s I read Think and Grow Rich, and just really it made so much of a miracle sense to me, because you could put think and grow anything. And I just honor the work that Napoleon Hill did, and thank you to Carnegie to fund it and make it happen over all those years. But it's a book that I always recommend in every speech that I do. Why? Because of how powerful the steps are in the process. I find that it links into everything that you do on an everyday basis, and it stays with you for the rest of your life. And so in 2002, I read another book by a guy named Michael Gerber. And Galen, you made a great statement that Napoleon said, that if you think learning is over after you graduate college, that you're really doomed to failure. And I am so much a proponent of that. All of our PeopleTech people and the great coaches believe that it's a continuous learning process for the rest of your life. It never stops, no matter what age you are, no matter if you're working, retired. We in PeopleTech deal generally with people in business, whether they own their own corporation or they work for a large corporation. So what happened is in 2002, I said, I read this book by Michael Gerber, and it said, if you're going to be successful, it can't be just you running around trying to create your vision, particularly in the consulting world. It's fine. You'd be a great consultant as an individual, but you really need to build the team and teach other people to do what you do. So at that point, I did. I started to bring other people in, teach them how to do the leadership journey, and we started to run these journeys in Phoenix and in Florida. And then a few years later, they started to run virtually. And then we started to notice that teams started to really benefit from it. So we reorganized the knowledge again and took and became specialized in how do you help teams in companies be good. And then it started to transform entire organizations. So the process is really about, you know, opening up, sharing knowledge, and helping each other. I hope that wasn't too long, but thank you.
No, that's perfect. Thanks. That's perfect. And I'll tell you, Michael, Ursula is like, I don't know if you've met her before, but she is just brimming here. She's got so much that she wants to share with you. So go ahead and jump in, Ursula.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Galen. Ursula, I'd love to hear from you.
Oh, but my goodness, you took me way back. Just to give you an understanding of why I got all excited, when you mentioned EDS, I worked for GTE Data Services. And so you get it.
Yeah,
we were on similar paths, and the two, we were competing but collaborating at the same time. So it was really in our psyche to hear about EDS all the time. And when you talked about the technical people and personalities and what have you, when I got my first management job, the person said that I walked in and took somebody's job because I was one of the few that was both task-oriented and people-oriented. And my second promotion came as a result of the fact that I put subject matter experts with trainers because I wanted the people that knew what they were talking about with the ability to present it. And so as I listen to you, it's like, oh, my God, I'm talking about walking down memory lane. And I understand a lot of what you're saying. But my question to you is now having this big corporate experience and the big wheels that turn with that corporate experience and dealing with entrepreneurs as it relates to specialized knowledge, what are some of the key things that you find that they do right or do wrong?
No, that's a fabulous, fabulous question. And while we're mainly working with the people aspects, but that's generally where things start to go awry in even their specialized knowledge. What happens is the lack of some of these steps, taking and organizing a process around their vision, their mission, their goals. A lot of them don't have action or a desire of what they're looking to create, and that's what starts everything. So that desire of what do you want to create? What does it look like? What does it feel like? How do we visualize it? And then taking it and organizing it into plans and into action. So taking what they already know, because most of the people I work with are already experts in what they do. And what ends up happening is because they haven't built enough trust or enough confidence in the teams that they have, what ends up happening is people aren't on the same page. So I hope I'm answering this to what you're looking for, but organizing that team and getting everybody focused in the same direction in terms of what they're trying to create, because they built a sense of trust first, and having that trust with each other that we're all on the same, going in the same way, leading to the same end and working to the same goals. That's what I find to be the biggest issue, that they haven't started with the basics, which is how are they all working together to create and implement what they need to, as even a smallest company of 2, 3, 4, 5 people to the largest company and of many thousands, pretty much struggle with very similar things. How do we treat each other? How do we build trust? How do we get on the same page of what we want to create? How do people let go of fear, have more faith? All the things that are built into what Napoleon Hill created here. And each person that has certain desires wants to be able to implement those, and because some of the structures of the past hold us on to maybe we're holding this job because the money is really good. You know, we obviously have to think of the realities of those things, but what ends up happening is because you have this desire and you don't go to fulfill it, all the other things start to manifest in terms of not being healthy. And so things start to fall apart. So all of these things connect from the smallest company to the largest company, and how you implement it and what tools you use and how you keep it going is so crucial. I hope I answered, Ursula, what you're looking for.
You did. And to that point, one president of GTES used to say a team will do or can do any what if they knew why. So pulling them together like that and helping them understand where their skills and tasks fall. Yeah, I thank you for all that you said.
Thank you, Ursula. I'm so glad you have a comment back there. Go ahead. Sorry.
This is Sagin, and you talk about somebody holding back. Ursula, great question. Michael, great answer. But while you were talking, there were a couple of things that were jumping up for me, and I'm so glad that you're on sharing how you're using the book in a process to help people understand where they're at. But I do want to go back to something, two things that you said, which you said so much. One was, I loved how you were saying that not only is the leader need to go within and really look at their desire and look at what structures they're holding on, but also the knowledge of, you know, we're talking about specialized knowledge, that this sense of, do I trust you and are you competent, O team of mine? I don't know that I trust you and I don't know that you're competent. And having the question of, do they have the specialized knowledge I need? And have I even defined what I need? I just love the way that you were going. I wanted to ask you about that second part that you were talking about, is identifying for both the leader and each team member the power of knowing their desire and being honest and saying, is this where I belong? Is this what I'm about? How do you see that playing out with organizations? And certainly going forward in our world right now, how do you see specialized knowledge being transformed and what people need to know so that they are doing their desires and using specialized knowledge to grow for the future? Because everything is changed, it'll be new.
Exactly. And these are powerful questions, both you Fadim and Urkel asked. So, and I appreciate that. The sooner people jump on the process of self-discovery, of honoring what their desires are in terms of career, in terms of how they want to work, in terms of what works for them, what doesn't, the sooner, what is work, you know, what does it look like to them? What does it feel like? What do they want to create? The sooner people start practicing these principles, pretty much that's outlined in this book, because it could be think and do anything. And the sooner that they do that, the better, because my view of the future, and this may seem kind of nutty, but my view is that no one should really ever be what's the traditional word of an employee. We all should be owners, and if not, we should at least act like owners. So what does that mean? Well, if we own what we're all about, and if we own the creativity, the innovation, and the inspiration that we bring to this or any organization, and in People Tech we call it magic dust. If you end up bringing your magic dust everywhere, you can go from assignment to assignment to assignment, and you could build other teams that work with you. You can do whatever you want to lead the life that you want. We see it now happening with big employees, and in my view, what I see of the future is there will be no real. It's not going to be an employee, if you will. And I know that sounds crazy, but what it's going to be is there's an assignment. Somebody has magic dust. We need that person to do the magic dust. And then that person gets the assignment and they're part of the team. So they're going to have all the skills to be able to mold into a team really, really well, really, really quickly, and have all the people skills. So all of these skills that are outlined here and learning about yourself and how you come across and how you can be a better member is only going to be magnified, triplified, and quadruplified in the future. At least that's my belief. And I think that there won't be for jobs applying for jobs. Basically, what it'll be is you apply to use your magic dust in a particular assignment because they need you and they can move. You know, you can be moved from here to there to everywhere and we see it with the gig employees. I hope that's answering what you're saying.
Not only is it answering me, you and I could have a conversation for 2 hours because I am, like, tons of questions are popping into my head. But I can feel, Peter, and I see you, Peter, that you're just ready to jump in on this. And so you go because I can just take Michael and hug him and have him all to myself.
Thank you, Padine. I'm looking forward to the hug.
Well, Padine, you got to give me a chance to get my hugs in as well. So I'm not going to come up here. Michael, thank you again so much for joining us today. I had a question, but then you threw me a little bit because you said something that's really near and dear to my heart that I even chat about with my clients, and that's ownership. And ownership of career, ownership of life, but really even managing your career like your own CEO, as I like to say it. So I really resonated with that statement. And this chapter here, Specialized Knowledge, also goes into something that you talked about in your intro about education and the pursuit of education, but also in this case, the pursuit of knowledge. Galen said at the outset that, you know, many academics are jack of all trades, master of none. But it's so important to be able to dive into and continue your education and continue your pursuit of knowledge, whether it's in your path that you're seeking out or just in some specific niche. So maybe if you can tie those two together, and my question is around, you know, if you were working with a client on this ownership, this CEO of their career, as I had mentioned it, and how could you weave in this specialized knowledge towards that individual who needs to really grab hold of their career and dictate it how they need to or how they see fit? Hopefully you understood that question.
Yeah, Peter, no, it's a fabulous question. I hope I answer it, what you're looking for here. So there's a lot packed in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that you talked about, and I appreciate, is owning your career. And there's a book that we recommend for many years by John Miller called The QBQ, The Question Behind the Question. And it's powerful because it's you own everything. We're accountable to everything. There, you know, it's asking what can I do and how can I do it, not who's to blame. So the number one thing about owning everything, everything that's happening on a day-to-day basis, everything that's happening in life, certainly we have to own what we're going to do. What is our role? What is our career? What do we want to be good at? And I'd say, you know, the first thing to start with is yourself. And start doing different things to find out what you like, what you don't like. If I hadn't worked at EDS, and I'll go back to my time at Ross Perot's company, where my desire at that point was I had worked in a bowling alley in South Florida where I was cleaning bowling lanes and all the cigarettes and all kinds of stuff like this. And in my mind, I was working on computers, but I said, because they have large computer scores, I said, I never want to clean an ashtray. This is not what I want to do. And so I just said, I want to wear a dark suit. And lo and behold comes EDS, which is a dark suit and a white shirt and tie shoes. Okay. And so I end up at this computer company, not really understanding that that was the beginning of gathering knowledge. So even if it's a little bit random, if you will, at first, everything you do, you'll know if you like it, you don't like it, and how it fits in. But go in with the full gusto of still working on what is it that you're looking for, but do something. Because what I find is the, you know, and I'm not saying rush into anything. I'm saying you need to really think it through and see that it matches, because you'll already know if you like, not like. But sometimes you got to do things you don't like to find out and learn new things that are going to fit in somewhere. So working in the computer world was fabulous in terms of knowledge and fixing programs and job control language and all that great. But I knew that there was a bigger thing that I wanted to get into, and all that, all of those things still connect. Why? Because all the people that you meet along the way become connected to the knowledge that you have. And so all those people, all those processes, all those methods, they're all still connected, believe it or not, to people tech today. Some of the people even, you know, and particularly in the large financial institutions, many, many of them still work with me today. But the point is I don't think anything goes to waste. The first step in my mind, to answer your question, is to the first step is to know that everything is important and that you own everything. You're not blaming anybody for something happening to you.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for that. I'm a big proponent of that. So often we hear that people are blaming their employer, their manager, the government, society for their past, and instead of taking ownership of it all wholeheartedly. So thank you so much for that response there as well. And I think you have a burning question as well. So thank you so much.
Peter, wow. I want to add, before you go into it, can I add one more thing, Peter? The continuous process of self-discovery also is important, because added to the accountability, if these are muscles that don't get built just because you did one tool or one career profile or one type of investigation of yourself by speaking to people about your strengths, abilities, and talents. These are muscles, your influencing muscles, your attention to detail muscles, that take time to get built over a lifetime. As I was reading this particular chapter, I'm saying, oh my God, there's things that I'm not doing that I really need. Those are muscles that have to keep getting built. And I hope I'm clear. It's a process. It's not an event. And it's not to beat yourself up or torture yourself that you haven't gotten where you're going. It's a full life process. And that's the whole point of continual learning forever. I hope that answers, Peter, the ties it all together.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah, thank you so much, Mike.
Yeah, I was going to answer for Peter. This is Ann McNeil. And I have to tell you something that Galen says all the time. This has been one of the best shows ever. We have lots of people that are chiming in. We want to remind them that if they have a question or want to participate, just press 1 on your dial and we'll bring you in. But Michael, you are so in the book. And as opposed to having a question, I am sitting here with, now you made reference to Michael Gerber's book. I have it in my hand, The E-Myth Revisited.
Awesome. Exactly.
You made reference to QBQ with John G. Miller. I have it sitting here in my hand, private and personal account. Come
scary.
On now. And so what else you got? All right. So what you have done for me today, and then we're talking about Think and Grow Rich. What you have done for me today and for everybody listening is that you are confirming what Andrew Carnegie knew when he asked Napoleon Hill to take 20 years of his life and research this philosophy. But he said, I will not pay you a dime. In other words, if you're willing to invest in yourself, the return of that investment that you will receive, you will become a millionaire. But more importantly than that, you'll create more millionaires in the world, and that book has done that. But the power is in the pages of the book. And it's not just
so
that book. And what you've demonstrated today is that it's in every book as you lift it to read it with a spirit of excellence, like exercising a muscle that you're referring to. So I just like to I'd like to make that statement first and just thank you so very much. And again, for me, you're confirming all these books that I'm reading, something in every single area of my life. When we open this program, yes, but you're confirming that. And for me to have them both sitting here on my desk, in my hand, you're confirming it. So my question to you is, that I think would be equally as appropriate for all of our listeners, and that is a very different question, which really speaks to a book list. And so I don't know if you have any favorites. You've mentioned two of my favorites today, but I think that may add an additional value to all of our listeners, because oftentimes we're all looking for something good to read, but it balances out every area of our life if we're reading in every area of our life.
Well, that's great question. And I do out in our, and we've put together many, many lists of books because we, every week we put together a leadership tip that we send out complimentary to anybody. And you can sign up on our website at peopletechcoaching.com. But that email goes out and in there we have made several recommendations of book lists. And I have one of them that I like that's really powerful is a kind of a reference guidebook. It's by a man named Jim Horan, Horan, and it's called The One-Page Business Plan. And that – do you have that next to you, too? That's
keep
hilarious.
Going,
this
going,
is, it's
going.
Too funny. It's too funny. You have it in?
Yeah. I picked the fifth amendment.
Okay. That book by Jim Horan has these templates in it. And how do you take your vision, make it become reality? And he's got these different templates. I highly recommend that as a tool for people to have and kind of work through and think through, particularly if you're a business owner, an entrepreneur, and you want to get yourself organized. And it ties into Think and Grow Rich. Why? Because it helps organize everything. So I always like that as well. Obviously, there's so many, many, many leadership books that are very, very powerful. 12 Irrefutable Laws, John Maxwell, he's done so much. He's got so many good books. But one that I really, really like as well is The 5 Behaviors of a Dysfunctional Team by Patrick Lencioni. And the reason I like that so much is any leader is at some point – has to lead a team. And why not understand the process and the method of creating a successful team? And so Patrick has taken that book and, you know, through creating tools, we now have 5 behaviors of a cohesive team that undoes the dysfunction. But you could read the book and start to practice some of the things that he recommends in 5 Behaviors of a Dysfunctional Team. And then there's the 5 Behaviors of Becoming a Functional Team. So that set of books is very, very powerful for anyone that owns a business or anyone that is leading a group of two or a group of many. I recommend that as well. One of the books that I'm using right now, it has no author to it, but I'll just talk about it. It's called The Gratitude Journal. It's journal 5 minutes a day to develop gratitude, mindfulness, and productivity. I started to work on it about 40 or so days ago. Somebody had recommended it to me. And I got to tell you that there's no reading in it. It's just keeping a journal and being grateful. And in the times we're in right now, I can think of nothing more powerful than working through this. I've noticed that since I've been doing it, really unbelievable things have been happening, including, and I thank you for inviting me to speak here today, including me being present and being on the show. So I thank you. I couldn't be more grateful. And again, I think it's the book doing it. I have no idea. But those type of things you can't really explain. Like, you have all the same books I have. Can't explain it, but it's all great.
Okay, Galen?
Yes.
Galen.
Yes.
I have to take executive privilege. Wait, Galen. I'm sorry. I have to apologize to all of our listeners. I have to just take a moment after sending you that inbox. I have to take a moment of executive privilege here. And, Michael, you must be a fly on the wall in my home. I published a book called A Daily Date with Myself. It's a daily journal.
Oh,
I'm in the process this month of publishing a second journal because of exactly what you said, and the second journal is a gratitude journal. And so I have to just turn it back over to Galen now and say this, and we say this every week, this has got to be one of the best shows. Okay, Galen,
I'm getting
off the soapbox. All right, Galen. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, well, I was going to jump into that book conversation because I am such a fan of Patrick Lencioni and 5 Dysfunctions of a Team that my book that I published is actually Impact, a Leadership Fable, modeled after Patrick Lencioni and the five dysfunctions of a team in particular. So I am just such a fan of everything that you're talking about. And in particular, when you talked about the magic dust that people will, that will be the interview. The interview will be, what is the magic dust that you can offer to this project that we're working on? And it reminds me of something that's on page 77 of the book, where Andrew Carnegie states that he personally knew nothing about the technical end of the steel business. Moreover, he didn't even want to know anything about it.
Right.
The specialized knowledge that he required for the manufacturing and the marketing of the steel, he found available through the individuals that were in his organization or part of his mastermind. And for me, my passion for leadership is really coming from seeing and watching and studying those leaders that have been able to do just that, recognize the magic dust that everyone seems to be carrying, and then bring that in, invite that into the process at the right particular time in the right particular way. And so my question to you is, what has been the biggest example of a leader that you've seen do that incredibly well, whether it's whether they're alive today or whether they have passed on or whether they are someone that we've just read about in the history books? Can you think of one or two examples of leaders that have done that very thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and again, not everyone would know all these people, but the people that I've worked closely with, and I'll just give an example. A lot of people know Wayne Huizenga Sr. Well, his son, Wayne Huizenga Jr., turned into one of our clients about 4 years ago. And I give him a lot of credit because he'd probably been through every single leadership program that you could go through. And he sent a couple of people to a process, the journey, and he saw change in them. And so he didn't really understand what was going on. And there's a fabulous, fabulous one of our coaches, Marilyn Brown. He started to talk to her, and he said, you know what? This is something that I'd like to bring in and have all of us learn about ourselves. So he brought it in, and he manages, or not manages, he owns a company that services large ships, large boats, large yachts for people that own these mega boats, and takes the captains, the crews, and everybody, and houses them and feeds them and make sure that the boat is in great, great condition and shape. And his goal was customer service prior to all that, being known and honored for the wonderful, wonderful service of being separated from the rest of the world in terms of the service that they provide. And through the process of his vision and his dream and his goals and helping the people with certain tools and methods, he's able to take their magic dust so much better in terms of how they apply it to deliver outstanding customer service. And it's transformed an entire company, an entire organization. Everybody had to put in their own work, but he set a framework in motion to allow everybody to do it. So there's an example. I mean, there are many examples of people around the world that do these things. Some of you guys might take exception to this. There are people like, even I'll throw it out there, Howard Stern, who's a little bit unique, and people think, oh my God, he's very mean and this and that. But really, when you peel back what he does and how he does it to get people to be open and vulnerable, he does it in a very tough way sometimes, but he's learned a lot about himself over the last 3, 4, 5 years and taken that knowledge that he's learned about himself and adjusted his approach so it's more respectful, more honoring, and more kind. And so you combine that with the way in which he makes people laugh and comedy, it makes him a much more healthy person, and he's able to transcend that now in a much more powerful way than he was before, and have a much greater impact because of how he's into continual learning for himself, continual self-reflection, and taking his magic dust, if you will, the thing that he does the best, and honoring his team for what they do the best. He's always done that. But now he's able to magnify how he does things because he's corrected some of the behaviors that are outlined in the Think and Grow Rich book. So I hope those are some examples that people can relate to.
Oh, fantastic examples. Fantastic examples. And just a great demonstration of how principles of this book really does transcend success in almost any category, any channel, any walk of life. And that's why we study this. That's why we love this book so. And so with that, I want to toss this back to all of my co-hosts. We've had such a powerful conversation. I would just love to hear just a very, very brief aha that you've taken from this conversation. Ursula, we'll let you go first. What's something that you've gotten from either this conversation or from your reading of this particular chapter?
Well, a couple of things. First, one came from you, Dylan, when you said the use of the knowledge and the packaging of the knowledge, and that relates to something that I did in terms of taking a chart, and at a crucial point in my life, I analyzed who I am, who I was at the time, and what I wanted to do by putting all my skills on one side, everything I ever learned, liked to do, wanted to do, was trained to do. And on the right-hand side, I put, was I using it? Did I still like it? Does it make me money? Do I want to do it in the future? And from that is how I came up with the whole slogan about Sula 2. I found out that central to who I am is the person that loves old photographs, old stories, and I combine that with my technical knowledge of computers and making things work, and I can now put together books or legacy walls. So when that is an example of my use of the knowledge, and that what I did came from, or it's also in specialized knowledge. I flipped the page, but it's in there when the person actually analyzed who they are. And then the second thing, when Michael said, think and do anything, it was like, yeah, that's it. Think and grow rich, think and do anything. These are the principles that you need in terms of being successful at anything that you do. So think success, think money, think success, and the skills and techniques that you want to implement. So it's been a great day. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, co-host.
Thank you. Thank you all, and thank you for having me. It's just very, very exciting and humbling, and I hope it's helped people.
This is Pagin. I have to tell you that this is very exciting. So as the founder of Power Women Worldwide and offering opportunities for women leaders, speakers, experts, and authorities to shine, to be their highest selves, because we need leaders that are shining. I love listening to you and how you think about things. I love my MSW is in organizational development and group dynamics, and loved how you kept on going back and forth between the self, the self-awareness, the self knowledge that we need, and then mixing it to the other part of, you know, the organizational development. How do we bounce between one and the other, and knowing that we're there. So I am so grateful. One of the words that you said was, no one should ever be an employee. We should always be the owner. And that concept, when I talk to people about that, that no matter where you are responsible for what you're creating, what you're emitting, you're emoting, and that impacts and influences all those around you. And you have a choice to have major influence or major destruction, right? So thank you so much for being here. And everybody that's listening, if you go to powerwomenworldwide.com, and I am so grateful. And I'm going to bring in my friend, Peter. Show your brilliance, friend.
Thank you so much, Pagid. Michael, thank you again for joining us this morning. Some great gems that you've shared with us wholeheartedly. One of the biggest things that I resonate with and I took away as I was listening to you and your story and even your responses to my co-host was the pursuit of knowledge that you've even had. You and Miss Ann were sharing so many books, but I can even just hear that even if it's not the books, it's the admiration of specific leaders, as Galen had asked you about, the following or listening or adhering to their guidelines, even from the Howard Stern comment that you were able to see what maybe most won't be able to see even out of Howard Stern. So thank you so much for sharing all of that. And that's also a challenge to those who are listening. You know, as you are diving into your specialized knowledge or thinking about it at the very least, where are you getting it from? Where are you gleaning it from? And are you able to utilize others around you or even others you are listening to pique your interest and dive into these avenues wholeheartedly? Thank you so much for sharing, Michael. Again, my name is Dr. Peter James. You can find me on any social media outlet at Dr. Peter A. James. That's at DrPeterAJames. Thank you so much. And I think you got some stuff to share as well.
I'll be brief. I see the smile on the faces of those that know me well. Michael, my aha is the fact that leaders are readers. We hear that, and you were an excellent example of what that looks like. But not just leaders and readers, but the application of the knowledge. And so I cannot say enough, and I'll stop there before I do say too much, and I'll turn it back over to Galen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this conversation has been this is almost a dream for me, because you're saying so many of the things that I have either said or thought, and a few things that I was probably going to say next month, but once I got a little smarter. So I just, one of my biggest ahas, and this literally just came to me as I was listening to some of my co-hosts share their ahas, is that each of us, if you desire to be successful in any pursuit, we all need to be in pursuit of some grand question. We should all be in pursuit of trying to answer some grand question. And your question is going to be different than my question. My question is clearly around what makes for an effective leader versus an ineffective leader. And that drives everything that I pursue. But my challenge to everyone, and I really got that from this conversation and listening to you, to Michael, is that everyone needs to be in pursuit of some grand, of answering some grand question. And Michael, I'm just so, so excited to have had this conversation with you on the show. My name is Galen Bingham. I am the leadership strategist and founder and CEO of Kill Global Coaching and Consulting. You can find me on almost any platform under Galen Bingham. And I dare you, I double dog dare you, to go to www.killglobalcoaching.com, and kill is spelled K-I-L-N, globalcoaching.com, and challenge me to find a way to bake permanent success into your life or work. That is my aha. Michael, I would love to close this out with just understanding of if there are any key things that you'd want to leave with our audience, and please share any contact information that you have.
I just want to thank you, thank the entire group for all the great questions and wonderful energy, effort, and emotion. And I'm just very pleased and grateful that I could be here. Again, the way to reach me is at peopletechcoaching.com, P-E-O-P-L-E-T-E-K, coaching, C-O-A-C-H-I-N-G.com. My name is Mike Kublin, K-U-B-L-I-N, and you can find videos on YouTube. You can sign up for our complimentary weekly leadership tip. There are also look forward to speaking to anyone, and you can reach me through the website. But there are also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, again, worldwide. And there are books that I've written that I really encourage and love feedback on, 12 Steps of Courageous Leadership. That would be one of them, and would love to get your feedback on that. And I just can't thank you enough. I've had several ahas as I'm sitting here, so I think it's going to be a continual learning based on this wonderful conversation that you've invited me to share what I'm learning here. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And this has been another fantastic conversation. We don't, I feel like we don't have shows. We have conversations. And this has been a wonderful one with the Think and Grow Rich International Mastermind Association on Blog Talk Radio. I'd like to leave you, before we go to our final commercial, I'd like to leave you with a quote that's actually on page 89 of this book, and these are the words of Napoleon Hill. He says, "Anybody can wish for riches, and most people do, but only a few know that a definite plan plus a burning desire for wealth are the only dependable means of accumulating wealth." And with that, I want to bid you farewell. Until next time, please continue to think and grow rich. Take care.
Thank you.
For more information about the International Mastermind Association, visit internationalmasterminders.com. Or on Facebook, visit the group International Mastermind Association. The name of the book is Think and Grow Rich, the original version restored and revised by Napoleon Hill. ISBN 1-593-30-2002. That ISBN number again, 1-593-30-2002.